නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ ඒකායනෝ අයං භික්කවේ මග්ගෝ සත්තානං විසුද්ධියා ශෝක පරිද්ධවානං සමතික්කමාය දුක්ඛ දෝමනස්සානං අත්ථගමාය ඥායස්ස අධිගමාය නිබ්බානස්ස සච්චිකිරියාය යදිදං චත්තාරෝ සතිපට්ඨානාති. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta. Satipatthana Sutta is available in Majjhima Nikaya as well as in Diga Nikaya. There, Buddha explains how one can develop mindfulness, and it will further development will lead to development of the seven enlightenment factors, and then it even leads to develop freedom and the wisdom. So likewise, there's a very beautiful gradual path Buddha is showing, and we are now trying to understand each and every satipatthana, the establishment of mindfulness. So as you can see from the diagram, there are four components. First, related to the body, next related to feelings, and then next one related to the mind or mind states, and the last one, Dhammanupassana, related to various phenomena. And actually, now we are discussing Dhammanupassana, and there also we have come to the Ayatana, that is the sense basis. So if we consider Dhammanupassana in general, Dhammanupassana helps us to touch some deep aspects of Buddha's teaching. Now, Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana themselves are very powerful. And in case if one is unable to understand certain very profound teaching of the Buddha, then during the Dhammanupassana section, there's a higher possibility that one would be able to recognize those teachings. So, therefore, the five methods or five techniques included there are arranged in a manner to go deeper and deeper, leading the practitioner to more profound understanding, starting with Nivarana. You know that every mind consists of this, a mundane mind consists of these various defilements, what we call as hindrances. So those hindrances, time to time, cover our mind. So that's why, therefore, we can't look at the proper picture. We ultimately get hooked up with various things, and therefore this nivaranas, what we call as hindrances, actually cover the mind. So if we are able to establish mindfulness and look at these nivaranas whenever they are present, so then we are in a better position to recognize them and slowly allow them to fade away. But in order to do that, one first of all has to establish mindfulness, has to have developed mindfulness, and again the clear comprehension, sampajanya, also has to be present, and one has to already develop to some extent, and with such developed mindfulness and clear comprehension, one would be able to recognize these hindrances. So the presence of hindrances, and then the absence of hindrances also can be recognized. And when there is a beginning of a hindrance or starting of a hindrance, that also can be recognized. When the hindrance start to fade away, because one now has disengaged from the hindrance, one is not promoting hindrance, one hasn't become a slave to hindrance, so therefore one is in a better position to tackle with it, to deal with it, to cope up with it. So as a result, hindrance start to fade away, and that also one can recognize. And after it has gone, then to some time or to for a certain period, it may not arise again. So that also one may aware. So likewise, we can say there are certain stages, progressive stages available in the practice of hindrances. Then Buddha taking us to the Kandapabba, where our whole experience is divided into five categories, five aggregates. Rupakkhanda, the material aggregate or the form aggregate, Vedanakkhanda, feeling aggregate, Sanyakkhanda, perception aggregate, sankharakkhanda, formations aggregate, and then the consciousness, the vijnana aggregate, consciousness aggregate. So likewise, the whole experience can be divided into these five aggregates, and whenever we clung to them, that also can be recognized. So we have discussed that also in detail. Now we are discussing ayatana, the sense bases. And last time I have introduced you what are the sense bases. Basically, there are six internal sense bases and six external sense bases. And constantly they are in contact. Eye with the form, ear with the sound, nose with the smells, tongue with the tastes, body with various tangibles, and the mind with various mental objects. So constantly they are in contact, they are in sort of in transaction. But the point is, as they are in contact, it produces various defilements. And here it is referred as fetters, sangyojana. So the practice here, Buddha recommend, is to recognize these hindrances, to understand these hindrances. So to recognize these various sangyojanas. Now previously we recognized as hindrances, but didn't have much understanding how they are occurring. But here we are keep an eye on our eyes, forms, and when they are in contact, how the defilement going to arise, how the fetter going to arise. We are keeping an eye on our ear, we are alert on our ear, what we are hearing. And as a result of this listening, what is the defilement, what is the fetter going to arise in the mind? So we are alert on our nose when we feel some sense, feel some odor, incense. So what is the defilement going to arise because of that? Again, we are quite alert about our tongue, and when it is tasting some sort of a taste. So what is the defilement going to arise in the mind? Similarly, we are quite vigilant about our body, and whenever it's going through some sort of a contact, some sort of a tangible sensation. So what happens to the mind? Is it going through any kind of defilement? Is it going to attach? Is it going to repel? So likewise, we are observing the mind. Similarly, if there is a kind of a sign arise in the mind, or thought arise in the mind, so is there any other further development of defilement? Any other arising of defilement, a fetter? So that is what we are now trying to recognize. So you can understand now this requires fair amount of mindfulness. Because you have to be on guard on these senses. Otherwise you can't recognize them. You have to constantly on guard of these six senses. Then only one can recognize how these defilements are going to arise. Now there's a very beautiful story happened during the Buddha's time. There is a little fairly old monk called Malunkeputta. So he once approached the Buddha and asked that, Bante, I am pretty old now, but I am quite in need of crossing this samsara. So therefore, please give me an advice. Then Buddha, without immediately giving him an advice, Buddha wants to sort of make him further arouse some urgency in him. So what Buddha mentioned is that you are quite an old monk, and if you are sort of coming and asking like this, so what am I going to talk to these young monks? They are quite vigilant, they are quite motivated, so they are quite ready to do anything. So when you are asking like this, what am I going to tell them? So then again Malunkeputta begged Buddha, the Buddha, telling, Bante, don't say like that. So just please help me. I am, even though I am old, I am pretty confident that I can do this. So please, therefore, give me an advice. So then Buddha gives a very beautiful, very profound advice. And he mentioned, if there is any sort of form which you have never seen, and again, currently also you are not seeing, and you have no thought or no desire even to see it, and you are not going to see it in the future. Are you going to get any defilement because of that form? Then Venerable Malunkiputta answers, no, because it is not possible, because he hasn't seen it, and currently also he is not seeing it, and he doesn't have a desire to see it, and even he won't be able to see it in the future. Then Buddha mentioned that there is no defilement going to arise because of that sort of a form. Similarly, assume that there are sounds, but Venerable Malunkiputta has never heard that sound, and currently also he is not hearing it. In the future also he is not going to hear it, and he doesn't have any desire to hear it either. Then there is no possibility of arising defilements because of that sound. Similarly, there may be various smells, but Venerable Malunkiputta has never sensed it, and currently also not he is not feeling it. In the future also he is not going to feel it, and he has no even a desire to feel it. Then there is no possibility of arising defilements because of such odor, such smell. Similarly, there may be various tastes. Such taste, Venerable Malunkiputta has never tasted. Currently also he is not tasting. In the future also he is not getting an opportunity to taste it, and he doesn't have even a desire to taste it. Then with such taste, there is no possibility of arising any defilement. Similarly, there are various tangibles which we have never in contact, and currently also we are not in contact. In the future also we are not going to contact them, and again we have no desire even to have a sensation using those contacts. And then Buddha asks, are there any possibility of arising defilements because of such contact? Then Venerable Malunkiputta says, no. Similarly, assume there is a thought, there is a mental object, which hasn't arising in the mind, not yet aroused in the mind. Currently also it hasn't aroused in the mind. In the future also it is not going to arouse in the mind. And you have no any sort of a thought related to such a mental object. Then there is no possibility of arising defilements because of such mental object. Now here, actually Buddha gives a very profound teaching here, that he is narrowing down our practice. If we are going to practice thinking all the sorts of forms, all the sorts of sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles and thoughts, then we can never finish it. And it is not necessary, because according to this Buddha's teaching, now we can understand only the ones that either we have seen it, either we are currently seeing it, and either we have a desire to see it, or that in the future we are going to see it. Only that is the ones causing the trouble. Only that is the one causing the arising of various defilements. Similarly, the sound, similarly the smells, taste, tangibles, and the thoughts, say mental objects. So therefore, Buddha narrows down our practice, telling that only the ones that you are dealing with, they are the ones causing you trouble. They are the ones arising, causing to arouse defilements. So they are the ones, therefore we need to be quite careful. On the other hand, if I give you a kind of a rough example, there are millions of people in the world, but we are associating only a few close people, and the defilements are arising because of those close associations. It is not that the people who are in far country, whom that we have never seen, never heard, and not even thought about them, then they are not causing any trouble. But the people that we know, we associate, we deal with, so they are the ones causing trouble. So likewise, when we consider the six senses, so whatever the corresponding objects coming through these senses, so they are actually causing the trouble, causing us various defilements. So likewise, Buddha in a way sort of clarifies the method, little narrows down the path for us. So in a way, So then we can say, okay, this is the area that I have to work out. You have completely removed or taken out what is unnecessary and properly recognized the necessary domain. And now Buddha mentioned that ditte dittamattam bhavisa. Now, Venerable Malukya Buddha, now try to keep an eye on your ear, sorry, on your eye. So just guard your eye, and whenever a form coming to contact, just stop from there. Similarly, when you are listening, don't go into proliferation, don't go into make any stories, formations, just try to stop at the listening itself. Similarly, when you are sensing, using your nose, tongue, body, there also just try to keep to that level. Don't go into proliferation, don't go into second thought. Just stop at that level. Seeing is just seeing. Hearing is just hearing. Sensing is just sensing. Don't go beyond that. And then, whenever you are recognizing, cognizing any sort of mental object, don't try to prepare a story out of that, ruminating out of that, any sort of a proliferation out of that. Just try to keep it to that level. So this is a kind of a restrainment that Buddha is mentioning. Now, once this is said, then Venerable Malunkiputta was so happy, and he said that, Bhante, that you have given me an advice in a very brief manner. So this is the way that I have understood it in a fairly comprehensive manner. So now he is going to explain to the Buddha how he understood. And he mentioned, Rupandiswa satimuttha piyanimittam manasikarot. Now, whenever one is ignorant about the transactions happening at the senses, so he doesn't have mindfulness. He is not established, he hasn't established mindfulness on each and every sense base. And assume that using the eye, one sees something. But the mindfulness is not established. Piyanimittam manasikarotu. Now what happens is, so the person, will consider a person here for the easy communication. So this person now looks at various signs, marks, various figures, which is more delightful. Sarattha chitto vedeti tancha ajjosaya tittati. As a result, now his mind is attached to those various signs, sights. So the various figures, signs, and those details, and his mind is quite interested about them, and he's searching them, recognizing them, and the mind is with lust, and lustfully he is sort of going through this experience. Tancha ajjosaya tittati. So he becomes sort of trapped in that experience. He go inside the experience. Tassa vaddhanti vedana aneka rupa sambhava. Now, as a result, there are various delightful feelings going to arise, and more signs going to arise in the mind. Mind become more and more corrupted, and abhijja cha vihesa cha chittam asupahanyati. Now, more and more, say abhijja, here the sort of a strong desires are going to arise. And mind becomes somewhat tired some. And evaṁ āchinato dukkhaṁ ārang nibbānanti ucchati. Now as a result, more and more defilements are going to arise. More and more involvement going to happen. And you lose the freedom. And you go away from the nibbāna. You go away from the calmness, serenity. Because you are now growing the suffering. You are now growing the unsatisfactions. Now, likewise, Venerable Malunkiputta mentioned, so when there is unmindfulness, and while that you are listening to something, so you are listening it with the lustful mind, you go and attach with it, and more signs, more and more marks, figures of that heard sound, now you are taking. More and more mind get entangled, more and more mind get involved. And the feelings are going to arouse. Now, as a result, your mind become more, say, corrupted, we can say, occupied, and many greed, hatred, and all these defilements are also going to arise, and you are go away from the Nibbana, away from the calmness. You have lost the freedom. Similarly, related to the body, related to the tongue, related to the nose, related to the mind. But on the other hand, what happens the opposite? When one is mindful about the sense bases, now he's quite guarding the senses. At that time also, he's assume that he's seeing something. But he's quite mindful. He knows what he's seeing. So there he's trying to be vigilant not to arouse defilements. He is not going after the subtle details. It may be sort of delightful, but he's sort of restraining his mind. He's not going after these various signs. He's somewhat restraining his mind not to go after those signs, marks, figures. As a result, what happens? Virat Chitto Vedeti. Now his sort of sensing is free from lustful thoughts. He's not corrupting his mind. He's not deluding his mind. Mind doesn't going to get entangled because he's not taking those subtle information. And as a result, he's able to maintain the clarity, maintain the undefiled state of the mind. So here, one is getting closer and closer to the Nibbana. Instead of going away from the Nibbana, so this sort of a practice making one's closer and closer to the Nibbana. So likewise, he is explaining to the ears, nose, tongue, body, and the mind. So if one is guarding the mind and restraining this sense transaction, then he is able to sort of getting closer and closer to the Nibbana. Now, when we are talking like this, so one probably think that we always have to guard the senses. That is true. But on the other hand, if we are not taking the signs, if we are not taking the marks, figures, then is it like, are we restraining the mind, restraining the senses? It is very much like we are closing our eyes, not trying to hear anything, not trying to sense anything, not trying to smell any sort of smell anything, taste anything, so something like that. So to some extent this is true, but on the other hand, there are more profound teaching Buddha gives in another sutta. Where there's a one Brahmin called Uttara, so he comes and meet the Buddha. So at that time, Buddha asks, what is the kind of restrainment related to the faculties that your teacher? So this when Uttara's teacher is called Parasariya, he's another Brahmin teacher. So what is the sort of advice that your teacher is giving related to the senses? Then Uttara, this youngster, he is answering, telling that our teacher says, don't look at forms, don't look at sights, don't listen to sounds, don't go after various incense, don't taste. And don't go for any tangibles, and not, don't try to don't think. So likewise, he is giving us an advice not to use these senses. So then Buddha mentioned, then all the deaf people and all the blind people should be already fully cultivated this practice, because their eyes are closed. They are not able to look at anything, and their ears are not functioning, and they are not hearing anything. So as a result, if this is the way, then definitely those people should be fulfilled this practice. Then when this Uttara Manavaka become answerless. So then when Buddha sort of indicate that there is a some profound way of developing these senses in the noble path. So there, Venerable Ananda was close by, And then, whenever Ananda request, plead from the Buddha to sort of preach about that. So this is Sutta is called Indriya Bhavana Sutta, available in Majjhima Nikaya. And there Buddha mentioned that it is not that one is sort of not seeing or not hearing, not sensing, not thinking, but one is keep an eye on them whenever there is a like arise in the mind, whenever there is a dislike arise in the mind, whenever there is like and dislike, both kind of a mixture arise in the mind, one become quickly aware of it. So basically one has developed the mindfulness to very high level, and one is quite vigilant, diligent, and as a result of some sort of a sense contact, he understood, okay, my mind has lost the freedom. My mind has lost the middle point. My mind has drifted from the baseline. Or mind was equanimous, now it is not more. It has gone to sort of a pleasure, or it has gone to a kind of a despair. Now he recognized, immediately he recognized. Now Buddha mentioned, don't be in that agitated state. Try to come back to that equanimous state, the middle point, the baseline, as quickly as possible. Say, for example, if you are seeing something, and as a result of that, assume that you become elated, quite happy, quite enjoying. So this is in a way kind of a shifting of our baseline. So mind was at a kind of equanimous, calm, simple state. But as a result of this sight, again mind become agitated. Again mind becomes sort of elated. Now the yogi has to recognize it, because since he has a fair amount of mindfulness, he's able to recognize it. Now Buddha recommend not to enjoy this agitated state, rather return back to that equanimous state. Etan santang, etam panitang, yadidang upekkha. So he recommends, he appreciates, to return back to that equanimity, because that is quite subtle and that is quite useful, and again it is quite necessary to return back to that equanimous state. So therefore Buddha asks us to always return back to that equanimity, and he appreciate, he value that equanimity. Etan santang, etam panitang, yadidang upekkha. So this upekkha, this equanimity is much more fruitful than being in an agitated state. So once you return back to this equanimity, again mind is calm. Again mind is clear. Again mind is unagitated, unexcited. So it is equanimous. So Buddha mentioned how quickly one has to come to this. He is giving a sort of a reference. He is telling like a flip of an eye that one has returned back to this equanimous state. So you can see how far that we can develop. So Buddha is giving a very interesting simile here, as the time taken to open and close your eyes. So that may not take even a second. So within such a rapidity that you got to return back to that equanimity. So you can see it's a kind of practical answer, practical sort of a method Buddha mentioned, that one may not return as quickly as that. But we can keep a reference of Buddha's simile. So always Buddha gives us a kind of a reference so that we are trying to accomplish it. We are trying to come to that level. It may take, say, 1 minute, 2 minute return to the equanimity at the beginning. But later, as we progress, as we practice, we are not taking too long to return back to equanimity. Similarly, Buddha mentioned related to the ears. So when you listen to something, as a result of that, assume that your mind become agitated. Assume that you are listening to a song. Your mind was in the equanimity. It was clean, it was clear, and it is not agitated. But assume that you are listening to a music, listening to a song. But again, you have drifted from the middle point. Again, mind become agitated. Again, you sort of start to dream. Again, you have shifted. So once the mindfulness has established, don't be in this deluded state. Don't be in this agitated state. Try to return back to that equanimity as quickly as possible. So likewise, Buddha mentioned related to the other senses as well. When you are sensing a incense, any odor, so if the mind become agitated, how quickly you have to come back to this unagitated state. When you are going through some sort of a taste, if your mind get deluded, if you become greedy, if you become involved, so then how quickly you can return back to the unagitated state. Similarly, the body, similarly the mind. Now, this unagitated state, this equanimity, this simplicity, this clarity is therefore, Buddha mentioned, much more fruitful, much for you, much more useful. Now, when it is mentioned like that, so one needs to, and Buddha mentioned particularly three methods how one can return back to, which are in a way helpful for one to return back to that equanimity. So what is the methodology that, or the strategy one has to apply in order to return back to that equanimity? So there are three methods mentioned in this sutta, which is in a way quite helpful for a yogi who is in the Cittanupassana or Dhammanupassana. So when you recognize that the mind has agitated, so this agitated state, Buddha mentioned, is rough. You are in a very, say, smooth place, least friction place, equanimous place, but now you are not. But now you are in an agitated state. Comparatively, it is very gross. It's agitated. So now Buddha asks us to be aware of this agitation, aware of this gross feeling, hard feeling. Your mind becomes somewhat colored. Your mind becomes somewhat heavy. Now you recognize this heaviness. Your mind becomes somewhat corrupted. You recognize this corrupted state. Then don't be there. Just appreciate that previous state, which is more clear, more lighter, unagitated, and with least friction. And therefore, return back to that least friction place, unagitated place, equanimous place, lighter place. So this is one method Buddha mentioned. So in a way, we have to be aware, we have to be vigilant about the agitation, about the sort of heaviness, hardness available in the mind because of the sense impingement. And we are not just being there, we are trying quickly to return back to this previous equanimity. The other method Buddha mentioned is that how we came to this place. We were in an unagitated state. We were in a quite simplified state. We were in an equanimous state. From there, we did various fabrications. We did various preparations. We have added so many parts. We have divided so many parts. We have sort of multiplied so many parts. So as a result, we have generated, we have constructed this new state. So therefore, Buddha asks us to see this construction. In a way, it is kind of looking back. So we, because of this sense impingement, the mind has become somewhat agitated, corrupted, like, I mean, based on the pressures, somewhat, say, liked or disliked. So all these sort of different states are there. So once you understand that state and you are now little looking back, how it is arising, what are the sort of weaving that I made in order to come to this state? It is not immediately happening, but it is quite quickly happening, of course. But as a result, when your mindfulness is established, is it possible for me to look back? How this has happened? I was in a quite clear position, quite stable position, unagitated state, a very simplified state, very clear state. So how this clear state has disappeared? How again mind become somewhat colored, occupied with so many things. How mind become somewhat heavy again, how this gradual process has happened. So there one can understand. So various constructions that you do, various additions that we put, various coloring that we put, so much of conditioning that we have added. So based on our likes, based on our dislikes, based on our upbringing, based on our nationality, whatever it is, because of, by adding all those sort of things, we have prepared this new state. So you are looking at this prepared state. You understand it's a prepared state. It's a constructed state. It's a fabricated state. So recognizing this fabrication, recognizing this construction helps you to unentangle the whole thing. It is no more a fixed thing. It's no more a solid thing. Rather, it become somewhat unentangled. It's become like a plant, banana trunk. It appear like it has a hard material, but as you peel it out, there is nothing there. There is no core there. Similarly, when your mind is agitated, when your mind become lustful, when your mind become angry, so if we are able to closely recognize the path, if you are able to look back, how you develop this state, how you came to this agitated state. Now we are little going step by step to the beginning, Yoniso Manasikara, and there you understand, so this is, I have weaved this. I am the one slowly constructed this. I am the one slowly formed this. So you recognize this. So this is another method Buddha asked us to do. So this way also you can quickly you can return back to that original state. That original state is unagitated. It is very clear, very simple, unattached, quite free. And he is providing another method, that is to see the cause and effect. So when eye is contact with the, say, form, there is the cognition happen, the eye consciousness happen. Now, all this happens at the same time, so there's a contact. So that contact causes some sort of a feeling. And then one recognizes, then the sanya happens. So as a result, now there is a thought. So you recognize and there's a thought arising. And then you are adding more thoughts, another thought, another thought, another thought. So likewise, now you start to weave. The thinking machine starts. So ultimately, you start to proliferate, ruminate, and now you are in a story. Now you are in a dream. So likewise, if we are able to see this cause and effect relationship, Patisamuppada, that is the other method Buddha mentioned here. So you can say, all these different techniques are available, and just knowing those are not enough. But time to time, whenever mindfulness is established, so we should apply these methods practically. So that is the most important thing. So all the details available in these suttas, we should try to practically apply into our life. Now, and Buddha mentioned, so this is the sort of the practice that available in a noble disciple's path or this Buddha's path. It is not that you are trying to keep your eyes closed, ears with the earbuds or what you call this earplugs, or you are not going to sense anything. So it is not that you are closing your senses and living. Rather, you are quite vigilant, you are quite sensitive, and when the mind becomes agitated, you are not encouraging that. You are trying to quickly return back to that equanimous state. So likewise, Buddha mentioned in this Indriya Bhavana Sutta, kind of a very practical approach that one has to apply. Now, there's a very profound part available in another sutta called Chabbisodana Sutta, what an arahant, how he has achieved this arahantship. So there are how he has handled his senses during his development, during his progressive path, he is now revealing. Say, for example, there's a real arahant And if one is going and approaching him and ask, how you achieve this? Then he is explaining his path. So it's very beautifully mentioned in this sutta. So there he mentioned, so whatever is seen, he's not going to sort of attach with it. Assume that there's a beautiful sight, his mind is not going to attract to that. And anapaya, his mind is not repelled by that. And he's trying to keep his mind independent, anisito. And appatibaddo, he's not going to sort of have a bondage with it, bound with it. Vipamutto, he's trying to keep free from those thought, that sight. Vipamutto, visangyutto, and trying to keep the mind unassociated with that sight. Vimariyadikatena cetasa viharam. And he is keeping the mind quite open. So it is not easy to understand what he is telling immediately. So a safe example, assume that you are developing vipassana and you have come to a level that you are able to maintain some freedom of mind. Suppose you are in the walking path. And while you are in the walking path, assume that you can see something. There may be a butterfly, there may be a monkey, there may be an airplane, there may be another person, whatever it is. So you are looking at something, you see something. Assume that he or she is someone you like. So immediately what happens is we lost the walking, we lost the mindfulness. Immediately mind go and attracted to that object. So the mind shifted to that place, we can say like that. So that is what the upadana. So we mind lost the present moment, mind lost the present status, present place, and the mind go and attach with that object. But on the other hand, if that person is someone you don't like, immediately mind get repelled. So you immediately look at some out another place. You immediately turn your head and you don't want to look at him. So immediately you get repelled. So this is how we typically operate. So if we do in any of these ways, we are anyway involved with this object. Our mind get involved there. And we are not free from it. And we are sort of bound with it. And our mind is fairly narrowed down to that object. So this is the typical handling of the senses. But on the other hand, assume that one is developing fair amount of vipassana. He is doing, say, continuous practice. As a result, he has seen the impermanent nature, and he has recognized the unsatisfactory nature. He has recognized the non-self nature. As a result, he is able to maintain the mind in the middle. Even though there are sights, mind does not go and attach with them. Even though there are sounds, mind does not go and involve with them. Even though there are, say, incense or smells, mind don't go and delight with them. There are tastes, mind don't go and start to talk about them. Say, if there are tangibles, still mind does not go and attach with them. Even though there are slight thoughts, mind don't go and start to talk about them, create a story out of them. Just mind his own business. Mind stays in the middle. Mind is very much like at the center, not going to any of those external distractions. Mind has its own stability. So this is something that many yogis actually experience as you develop your practice, especially in the vipassana. So you are able to experience this kind of a situation where your mind now has some stability. You can maintain that stability, and even though you are in the walking path, even though you see something, mind hasn't drifted there. Mind hasn't shifted there. Mind hasn't gone there. So you are able to maintain your walking path. Say, even though there are sounds, you may hear them, of course, but mind does not go and involve with them. Similarly, the smells, similarly, the taste, similarly, the tangible, similarly, the thoughts. So you now gain some amount of stability. You have your own island, while being there, you continue your practice. So this is what this Arahant is mentioning. So he continued like this. He continuously went through practicing like this. So as a result, what happens? Evam kome also janato evam passato imesu chatusu oharesu anupadaya asavehi chittam muttanti. So he not only did like this for the sights, he did for the sounds, he did for the smells, he did for the tastes, he did for the tangibles, he did for the thoughts, mental objects. Continuously he is doing like this, he is trying to maintain his mind free, independent, unassociated, and say uninvolved, not being attracted, not being repelled, but in the middle. Uninvolved, very clear, spacious. So this is the state that he is further and further developing. As a result, what happens? All those ditta sutta mutta vinyata, all these sights, sounds, I mean the seeing, hearing, and sensing, and the cognition, all that sort of faculty related experience now does not cause to arouse defilements, rather they start to fade away. The defilement starts to fade away. The hidden tendencies, latent tendencies starts to weaken. Anupadaya asavehi chittam vimuttanti. So the his mind is not clinging to them. As a result, the fetters, influxes, latent tendencies going to fade away. And this is how I was able to achieve this. So this is a very beautiful explanation that this Arahant is giving. So you can see the practice is not that immediately that you are able to achieve, but rather you have to practically live the path. You have to practically develop the path. So this is where the Sila Samadhi Panya is coming to the picture. That just the establishment of mindfulness is not enough. So you have to further develop the wisdom. You have to see how things are arising, how things are changing, passing away. All these things you have to see. Then only the wisdom going to arise. But in order to develop it for a long time, you need a path. You need morality. You need sense restrainment. You need to guard the faculties. And you are now further and further developing the wisdom. And you are maintaining the clarity of mind. You are maintaining the sort of calmness of the mind. So likewise, so this leads to the fairly cutting off the defilements. So this is how explained in the Chabbisodana Sutta, again in the Majjhima Nikaya, that how an Arahant has